Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York and Colorado Public Radio, this is Ask a Legal State, a national conversation about pot. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC, along with Anne-Marie Awad from Colorado Public Radio and host of their new podcast about legal cannabis called On Something. How do you say it, Anne-Marie? Did you say on something or on something?
On, like, oh, that person must be on something.
Okay.
Emphasis on.
Now I'll say it right.
Joining us now to talk about cannabis and criminal justice are Derek Johnson, president and CEO of the NAACP, and Twyla Carter, senior staff attorney at the ACLU's Criminal Law Reform Project. Hi, President Johnson, and hi, Twyla Carter.
Hi, how are y'all doing?
Good afternoon. How are
good,
you doing?
Good, good, good. All right, we invite your phone calls from people in legal states to tell the rest of the country something important or something interesting. And it's all about social justice in your state. We also invite people from non-legal states to ask a legal state, as is the name of this program. Any question you might have about the social justice impacts of legal weed, give us a call, 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255.
Or tweet a question with the hashtag #WeedToKnow. Derek Johnson, one of the biggest reasons a lot of people want legalization, I don't have to tell you, is because African Americans have been so hard hit by criminalization over the years, even though they use cannabis at about the same rate as whites. And yet my impression is your group, the NAACP, is divided on this. I saw, for example, that Illinois is debating legalization now, and the state NAACP chapter has come out against. So what's the big picture of your and your organization's take on this movement?
Well, let's really divide the conversation in two components. First component is the question around legalization of marijuana. The second part of the question is overcriminalization of African American as a result of possession of marijuana. I think we are in a uniform position in terms of the overcriminalization of African Americans as a result of marijuana convictions. Far too many young people's lives have been destroyed as a result of having less than 1 ounce. It is a national position that individuals should not be criminalized because of possession of an ounce or less. That's a national position. There are some disputes there. Our number one concern is reversing the war on drugs as we see it destroy many African American communities across the country throughout the 90s. Our real passion in this conversation is how we decriminalize this scenario so more young people's lives are not taken, but then what is the path for expungement so we can restore individuals who are now walking around with felony convictions, unable to fully participate as citizens because they had less than an ounce. And in some scenarios in the South, they had only a joint. Now they're walking around with the dishonor of having a felony for something that should have never been a felony charge.
So is legalization a necessary prerequisite to expungement?
It is not a necessary prerequisite, but it would go a long way to right-size the conversation in ways in which African Americans and other communities of colors are not disproportionately impacted as a result of the criminalization and the war on drug movement.
We'll continue in a minute, and we'll bring in Twyla Carter from the ACLU. Interesting to see how the ACLU and NAACP on this question overlap, but not entirely. So we continue on Ask a Legal State.
I smoke 2 joints in the morning. I smoke 2 joints at night. I smoke 2 joints in the afternoon. It makes me feel all right. I smoke 2 joints in time of peace and 2 in time of war. I smoke 2 joints before I smoke.
Thank you. From WNYC in New York and Colorado Public Radio, this is Ask a Legal State, a national conversation about pot. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC, along with Anne-Marie Awad from Colorado Public Radio and host of their new podcast, On Something. With us talking about cannabis and criminal justice are Derek Johnson, president and CEO of the NAACP, and Twyla Carter, senior staff attorney at the ACLU's Criminal Law Reform Project.
Before the break, we spoke with President Johnson about the NAACP's view on legalization. Twyla, I'm hoping that you can give us a sense of what the ACLU's position is.
I think our position is relatively similar. We also agree with the racial disproportionality that you see in Black communities with regards to marijuana convictions and the over-policing of Black and brown communities with that particular charge. I think it's interesting. I was a public defender for 10 years from Seattle, Washington, and King County, Washington, and for perspective, I think it's interesting that now you see in states where it is legal, where you have white people who are making millions of dollars off of selling marijuana, and you have Black and brown people going to jail and prison for possessing marijuana. So I think in that line, we are perfectly aligned with the NAACP and would like to see, you know, less criminalization, especially with regards to marijuana.
I'm wondering from both of you, I mean, is legalizing recreational adult marijuana use, is that the key to ending mass incarceration?
Twyla?
It's a step in the right direction.
Go ahead, Derek.
It's a step in the right direction, but there also need to be parameters put around that. How are we going to condition the legalization? That's what many communities are asking. Are we going to treat the recreational use of marijuana similar to how we treat alcohol? Individuals who are 21 years or older are allowed to use it. Under what circumstances will we ensure that we don't cause harm to other individuals? This is a federal question that must be addressed. And I think the hodgepodge way in which we've been addressing this massive public policy issue is something that we really need to wrestle with. For the NAACP, our state affiliate in California take one view compared to our state affiliates in Michigan, who took a different view compared to our state conference in Illinois. But this is a federal question, and that's one of the things that will be on our agenda at our annual convention, so the delegates from across the country who will be represented at our convention would wrestle with this question so we can have a clear direction on where we stand as an association moving forward.
And with regards to the ACLU, I think we're very clear. All personal drug use and possession should be decriminalized.
As a matter of civil liberty, since you're the American Civil Liberties Union?
I think that's correct, yes.
Also with us now is the district attorney for San Francisco, George Gascon, who's going to tell us about his city's expungement program. Mr. Gascon, thanks so much for a few minutes today. Welcome to Ask a Legal State.
My pleasure, Brian. Good morning to everyone.
So how does expungement work in San Francisco?
Yeah, so what we did in San Francisco after marijuana was legalized for recreational use a couple of years ago, and it became effective in 2018, one of the provisions on this legalization process was that people that had prior convictions for marijuana offenses could petition the court to have, in the case of misdemeanors, they could have the expunge their prior convictions. In the case of felonies, they could have it reduced to a misdemeanor. And what we realized very quickly is that most of the people that have been affected by this were poor people, people of color, and people that really did not have the resources or the ability to recognize how to navigate the legal system in order to get the relief that the legislation provided. So I made a decision in early 2018 that instead of having people have to go through an attorney or a legal clinic to get this relief, that we as a district attorney were going to do this on our own. And we started the process of doing it. It was going to be a lot of work, and we recognized that, but we thought it was the least that we can do to right this wrong. In the process of that, I also started to evaluate how we could automate the process because we knew that it was going to take a lot of work. And I made it public that we were doing this, and there were DAs around the state that said, you know, that's not our work. We're not going to do it. But we had a few that said, you know, we would do it if we could, but we don't have the resources. So we partnered with Code for America and created a technology solution to the problem. Basically, we design an algorithm that could review criminal history of people that have been arrested in San Francisco and convicted for marijuana offenses. And the algorithm will basically automate the process of expungement or relief. It took us about a year to get the that process approved by the Department of Justice. We got it approved. And, you know, a few months ago, we were able to clear about 9,400 convictions. We also made the algorithm available to any other jurisdiction that wants to use it. So now we have four other counties in the state that are using it. And the goal is eventually to have the entire state of California provide this relief through the district attorneys. Additionally, we found that other states around the country and other jurisdictions that start to follow suit. When we announced that we were going to do this in January of 2018, immediately we had several jurisdictions that started to contact us, including Denver and other counties, King County and Washington, and other jurisdictions around the country, the state of New Jersey. And so that is also moving in other places. The other thing that we're doing is that we're not stopping there. We're looking at creating legislation statewide that would provide automatic relief for anybody that qualifies for any level of expungement or relief as soon as they do. So there will be an automated process to do this. Mm-hmm. And the reason for it, frankly, is multifold. One is, you know, the impact of a conviction has on individuals anywhere from housing to employment, education, voting rights, even, you know, even things like attending after-school activities for your kids. If you have a prior felony conviction, many school districts and many jurisdictions will not allow you to do so. But it's also a matter of equity. You know, we are moving forward with this, but this is only the beginning. This is not going to address mass incarceration. You know, the drug offenses are the tip of the spear, if you will. But the reality is that many other things that have driven mass incarceration in this country, you know, enhancements, you know, very punitive measures. So those things have to be addressed, too, and we're also looking at those things.
Well, I don't know if the district attorney from San Francisco is willing to take a caller from Berkeley, but we're going to give it a try. Carol in Berkeley are on Ask a Legal State. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is a wonderful program. I agree so much with the speaker, and I'm so thrilled by the San Francisco program about getting records expunged, because I'm a lifelong Californian, and we decriminalized marijuana for medical use several years ago, and now we have full legalization for recreational use as well. The decriminalization, I think, is the best part of our law, plus safe access so that users have a safe place to acquire any product they wish. Our experience with discriminatory policing in this area and in other areas is pretty well documented, and it's a serious issue for us. So I hope other states look out for that. But I'm concerned that the industry at this point doesn't take seriously that our kids' use here in Alameda County, I'm in Berkeley, is skyrocketing, especially high school use, middle school use. So what I'm seeing is that there is very little effort to create information at the point of sale for people who need to know that our lungs, all lungs, have not evolved to handle smoke of any kind. I don't care if it's burnt popcorn or burnt hamburger or wood or cotton. Our lungs can't handle smoke, and kids especially whose lungs are still growing need to know that, as well as adults, so that they can move toward the solid concentrates. And I appreciate what Mark Kleinman said earlier about the solid concentrates having a different effect on the body that is harder to calculate, I guess, for a user. But
maybe not smoke, for those just joining us, maybe not smoke in the lungs in that case, but the potency leads to other kinds of psychological effects in some cases.
Yeah, the idea is you can create the effect you wish and then go to a concert without affecting the people around you. And it's really important, because one of the things that I'm seeing is that police are not up to speed on the effect of smoke at a bus stop. You know, all it takes is one smoker to make your whole crew of kids on their way to school high as a kite because of an adult user.
Well, I don't know, and I'm going to jump in and get some responses. I don't know that it's that simple. One smoker gets a whole bus full of kids who are standing outdoors, high as a kite on secondhand smoke. Also, I think the public health people, none of whom are guests in this particular segment, tend to say there's not a lot of lung disease from marijuana smoking because people just don't smoke enough of it over the course of a day or their lifetimes compared to heavy tobacco users, where it's cigarette, cigarette, cigarette. But who wants to address anything that Carol brought up? D.A. Gascon, do you want to jump in on any of that?
Yeah, I think there are definitely some valid points that should be addressed through the lens of a, you know, public health view, not a criminal justice view. But there is no question that, you know, excessive use of marijuana, just like excessive use of alcohol or excessive use of cigarettes or any other chemical, may have a negative impact on the health of people. And certainly young people with, you know, brain development and all that are going to be more impacted by that. And that needs to be addressed by through a dynamics of the, you know, public health. My concern, and the one that continues to be, is how do we take this away from the criminal justice system? I am an advocate for decriminalization of all drug use. I'm also an advocate for, you know, reduction in incarceration in many other ways. And I think that what we need to do is we need to decouple drug use from the criminal justice system. I think that when it comes to impaired driving, which is another area that Carla brought up, it's a point well taken. I think the technology now is moving quickly to address when can we create some thresholds that we can say, you know, per se, that if you were under the influence of the use of marijuana and, you know, certain content in your blood of THC, that would, you know, that would constitute a legal violation of your driving rights. But even this, you know, to be honest with you, the other part that we forget about this stuff, people get really wrapped around this. But in another 8 or 10 years, this is going to be history because the majority of the vehicles on our roads are going to be autonomous vehicles. And you know, we'll have other problems, but we're not going to have the problem of impaired driving.
I would certainly...
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say I would certainly add to this discussion and point out...
And that's Twyla Carter from the ACLU. Go ahead.
With particular jurisdictions, we're talking about the term expungement. Other jurisdictions may not use that term. So it might be having your record vacated where you live, or it might be having your record sealed where you live. And there are differences in that way. And so I think it's important just to point that out, because if folks are asking to have their record expunged, and that's not something that exists. Washington State doesn't expunge records, for example. We vacate records. So I just wanted to make that distinction.
Yeah. Anne-Marie, go ahead.
That is a very good point, actually. Colorado, we seal records, there is a difference. It's expungement basically wipes it clean. Sealing is making it invisible. So the criminal conviction is still technically there. Most people can't see it unless you are law enforcement or somebody can sometimes get a court order to unseal your record. So there is a big difference, and there is a lot of call here in Colorado for stepping up what we have. A lot of people see the sealing process as insufficient.
Let's go to another caller then, and it's Sagan in Norwood, Colorado. You're on Ask a Legal State. Hi, Sagan.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay.
Good. I'm calling in because I have a really good friend, and he has a 14-year-old daughter, and she has epilepsy. So she has epileptic seizures, and she has medical marijuana to treat her epilepsy, and has been a godsend for them. It has completely helped with her epilepsy. But one of the big problems that they run into is that if they ever want to travel, they can't take their her medication across state lines if a state has illegal, or if it's illegal in another state. And so this is a problem they've run into every time that they've even traveled to, say, Utah. They have to either go without her medication and chance her having more epileptic seizures, or they have to illegally bring it into Utah. And if they were ever be caught with it, they could get in a lot of trouble, particularly since she's a minor.
And not just medical, but now that there's recreational use legal in Colorado and Maria and other states, I know there's even such a thing as marijuana tourism at this point, where people might go to Oregon or Washington or California or Colorado from some non-legal state, use cannabis while they're there, and then they start scratching their heads, oh, can I take this to the airport? I bought it legally. So the question of the law and leaving a legal state into a non-legal state, medical or recreational, is an increasing one. How does Colorado deal with that?
It's, I think, an ongoing battle. We got sued by a couple of surrounding states a while ago when we first legalized, and I think it's a really big priority for law enforcement and for, especially for the federal law enforcement area that we fall into. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you see that when a lot of states have legalized, sort of the states that don't legalize or the states that don't do exactly what their next door neighbor is doing, the criminalization tends to ramp up. There tend to be more arrests, and they tend for marijuana specifically, and they tend to carry kind of harsher consequences than they normally would in a legal state or before legalization happened next door.
Derek Johnson, president of the NAACP, how do you see your organization going about resolving the tension that seems to exist between, if this is the right way to put it, between the public health imperatives and the criminal justice imperatives? And in the context of what you were describing before of different state chapters of the NAACP coming down on different sides of the legalization question so far?
I don't see it as an attention because it's not. Once you decouple the conversation, we are in uniform support behind decriminalization. We understand that the mass incarceration movement was largely fueled by marijuana conviction. And in order for us for that to be addressed, it needs to be retroactive. That's a uniform position across the country in terms of NAACP. At this year's convention, we would then begin to address through our legislative process the question dealing with the legalization of marijuana. We are a SPARD democracy organization. Our local units have equal voice across the country, whether they are in Hawaii, Anchorage, Alaska, or Jackson, Mississippi. And because we're a SPARD organization, I'm beginning to see now resolutions come from local jurisdictions that we're going to have to debate on our floor. That's the beauty of the organization. I believe once we come out of our legislative session in July, we're going to have a clear position that all of our units would follow. But let's great focus here. For us, it is about the mass incarceration and how this industry of mass incarceration was fueled by unfair practices in terms of who was convicted and who was sentenced and who was issued felony convictions, which took a whole generation of individuals out of the system to be productive citizens. That's the question we are in unison around.
Derek Johnson, president and CEO of the NAACP, Twyla Carter, senior staff attorney at the ACLU's Criminal Law Reform Project, and George Gascon, district attorney for San Francisco. Thank you all so much for being part of Ask a Legal State. With Anne Maria Watt at Colorado Public Radio, I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC in New York on Ask a Legal State, a national conversation about pot. It continues on some public radio stations or at wnyc.org/legalstate.